As more and more planets are being discovered, it's not a bad idea to come to a accord on answering this question. What's a planet? Joining me with his finger on the Funken Wagnalls is Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Though, Derek, I don't think we're talking about a standard definition here.
Oh, no. We're sort of veering away from a standard definition, in fact. You know, when we've talked about how we define planets, it's revolved around the motion, if you will, of the now known as king of the dwarf planets, Pluto. You know, we've learned that Pluto was not part of the original number of planets in the solar system, and that there were many more, and dynamics down through the history of the early history of the solar system left us with what we have of the eight planets that we know of, and Pluto that we thought of as the ninth for quite some time. It's still in orbit around the sun, which was one of the criteria that was used to define planets by the International Astronomical Union. So a group of planetary scientists got together recently under the direction of a final year graduate student at Johns Hopkins University, Kirby Runyon, who, working with a group of astronomers across the United States, came up with what they feel is a better definition for these objects we find in solar systems that aren't stars. Let me read what their description is for you. A planet is a substellar mass body that has never undergone nuclear fusion and that has sufficient self-gravitation to assume a spheroidal shape adequately described by a triaxial ellipsoid regardless of its orbital parameters.
So it's round.
So it's round, yes. It has enough mass to pull itself into a sphere. And so that means that almost any other object in a solar system other than the star can be identified as planets. The new description, though, has eliminated some factors, like the necessity for the object to have cleared its orbit of all kinds of other debris. Well, we find that that's kind of difficult to consider when we look at things like the rings of Saturn, or if we look at how so many other objects in the solar system flying through the solar system get caught in the gravitational pull of an object and then fall into that orbital path.
Nine planets when Pluto was part of the family, now eight. With this new definition, how many planets are we talking about?
Oh, my goodness. We've now blown up the number of objects in our solar system that could be considered to be planets up to 110, up to 110 objects. But remember, this includes the planets themselves, their moons, and some of the objects that we see orbiting the sun out beyond the orbit of Pluto, you know, those dwarf objects that we have described before. And, of course, that number can go up as we continue to identify more dwarf objects orbiting the sun that we simply haven't seen yet, not to leave out the recently identified presence of what's being called Planet Nine.
Though, again, this is a proposal, and the International Astronomy Union will not likely entertain this notion.
The proposers of this are not planning to bring it to International Astronomical Union for their blessing. Their feeling is that this definition is much more user-friendly, much more education-friendly. This definition at least allows us to more broadly identify what an object is, no matter where it is in the galaxy. Is it here at our sun? Is it at a sun somewhere else? Is it round in shape? Does it fit all the real criteria that helps planetary geologists, those that really know what a planet should be, does it help them identify what these objects are elsewhere in the galaxy?
Parking plans to the side for a moment, is there any dispute about the definition of a white dwarf pulsar?
When we say white dwarf pulsar, we're actually taking two concepts that formerly hadn't been connected and connecting them. And the reason why is because typically when we talk about an object known as a pulsar, we're talking about a rotating neutron star. Now, this is a stage in the life cycle of a star. When it's aged tremendously, it's already thrown off most of its outer envelope of gases, and even at the nucleus has thrown off a bunch of protons and electrons, and you're left with just the neutrons.
And we're talking about a truly out-of-this-world spin cycle.
We're talking about objects that are rotating at incredibly high speeds. In fact, the very first one of these objects discovered back in the 1960s had a period of rotation that was 1.33 seconds long. That the star rotates in 1.3 seconds. Its day is 1.3 seconds long. Like the Earth's day is 24 hours long. Imagine the core of a star about the size of a city rotating at 1.3 seconds. That's incredible. And we've gone on to find others that rotate at hundreds of times per second, and these are known as millisecond pulsars. But they've always been neutron stars. So just recently, a group of astronomers have been able to identify an object that they now define as a white dwarf pulsar. This is before you get to the neutron star stage. But in this case, the white dwarf itself has such an incredibly high magnetic field that the magnetic field then squeezes down and directs the escaping energy from the white dwarf in such a way that it too develops the same kind of not just rotating characteristic, but also the focused beam of energy that typically a rotating neutron star has.
Is that a potential trajectory for our sun to evolve into a white dwarf and then a pulsar?
That's a really great question, but our star doesn't have enough mass to do that. And so although it's sometime into the great distance of the evolution of our star, we won't be around to see it, so to speak. We won't have to worry about that happening to our star.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight.